Hello, my name is Randy Rice, and welcome to this podcast on software quality and software testing. We're going to have a couple of special guests today from Grove Consultants, Julie Gardner and Lloyd Roden. But before we get to those interviews, just have a quick story here from some recent events that I think point out an important lesson about systems. This comes from National Public Radio, June 5th, 2007, a story that probably many of you have heard about. Even though many of the listeners on this podcast are from outside of the U.S., since this story involved an incident starting out in actually Greece, going all the way through Europe and into Canada and back into the U.S., you've probably heard about this, about the Atlanta attorney that had an extremely drug-resistant form of TB, was taken into custody, and congressional investigations are uncovering some key mistakes made by the CDC and the Department of Homeland Security officials. As the story goes, after public health officials placed Andrew Speaker in isolation, the CDC head, Julie Geberning, publicly applauded her agency's efforts to track him down. She said, "Our system works very well, and I want to end by thanking the public health officials from around the world who came together to really work through the complexities here and take steps necessary to protect the public's health," she said. Since then, investigators for the House Homeland Security Committee have found that government officials missed several key opportunities to prevent Speaker from leaving and re-entering the United States last month. The point I want to make on this is that her comment that the system works very well, I think, is only referring to the technical part of the system, perhaps the hardware and the software, because we did learn that the individual was flagged appropriately. The officer that was inspecting his credentials coming into the U.S. Saw that information and chose to let him in regardless. And now the big arguments are all about why did that happen. But the point it brings out to me is that a system is more than just hardware and software. One of the things that I used to teach in our blood banking classes, where we taught how to validate blood banking systems, was that from the regulation standpoint, especially from the FDA perspective, a computer system is comprised of multiple components: hardware, software, data, people, procedures. And when you fail to recognize the impact of people and procedures on the system, then you're really missing some key opportunities for finding defects and problems. The bottom line is the system may work perfectly, but if a person takes a wrong action based on something that they're seeing in the system, then that could be the same as a system defect. So I think that was very similar to what happened here, that the technical system probably did work right. But the incorrect actions of a person totally took away from everything that the system did. One of the books that I like to recommend to people is the book called Fatal Defect by Ivars Patterson that talks about the root causes of many of the safety-critical defects that have caused loss of life and limb. And in that book, the trend that you'll see there is that many of the root causes go back to some kind of user error, user interaction error with the system. And so when you're doing your testing, don't forget to test how the users are interacting with the system, and are the procedures correct? And of course, do they work in the real world? And that's what the whole thing about acceptance testing is about. But never forget that you always have this potential point of failure, which would be the people using the system. Okay, so now let's get to our guest in this podcast. We're going to start off with Julie Gardner. I caught up with Julie and Lloyd at a testing conference and had some questions about some of the things that they'd been speaking about at the conference. So let's just go right now to the interviews.
I'm talking with Julie Gardner of QST Consultants, and we're going to talk a little bit about risk. So how are you doing, Julie?
I'm doing fine. Thanks, Randy.
We're here in sunny Orlando.
We are indeed. Yeah.
Julie, tell me a little bit about how some of your clients have improved their testing based on what you've been able to help them with in terms of risk assessment, risk analysis.
Okay. A lot of the companies I work with are in pretty much the similar sort of circumstances. They're wanting to get things out as quickly as possible, but also understand what the risks are, the consequences of not doing all the testing that's necessary. And some of the test managers I've had have faced the problem of that they cannot communicate the situation in terms of quality in order for them to go live. The deadline is already fixed. There is no way of moving that deadline. So my recommendation has been to them to do a risk-based testing approach. And the value that I see within risk-based testing is that it provides information for those stakeholders to say, do you want to go live at this point in time, yes or no? But when we use this language of risk, the stakeholders, the users, the customers, the business, senior management, they can all understand the consequences of going live at a certain point in time. And if that deadline is not movable, then at least they understand some of the risks from a quality point of view. That's a major contribution that I can see. So I've worked with a few companies, more in the utilities and telecoms industry, where those deadlines are fixed because of a marketing initiative or whatever, and they have to get it out before their competitors. And they've started to do a risk-based testing approach. Now, I firmly believe that there is more than one risk-based testing approach out there, and you have to choose, be very careful of the risk assessment you choose according to your variables in your organization, such as organizational culture, the people who are going to be involved. You know, it's also a learning curve from the people point of view on the tester side, that we do as much as we possibly can, but at the end of the day, we have to let go of the quality if the managers are prepared to accept the risk. There's been a number of challenges within my companies that I've been working for because they know that the deadline's fixed, and I've helped them communicate that message to senior management to get buy-in to do this approach. And the nugget of information, if I could give you one, is to say, once you've put in a risk-based testing approach, risk will influence everything we do. You should be able to go to your test manager at any point in time of the project, and they should be able to tell you what the risks are from a quality point of view, which ones we've actually reduced and which ones are still outstanding, even though they're high, medium and low risk point of view. Do you want to go live, yes or no? And when you say to senior management, you know, forget the end date, you could even go earlier if you wanted to, they like that message. Now, usually testers get upset at this point because I'm suggesting that maybe this should put the testing time shorter.
Mm-hmm.
But in my experience, it's been that I've been given more time at 8 weeks. The last permanent test manager role I had, 82% of all the projects I worked on had timescales extended because it was too risky to go live. And the information you need at that go-live meeting is how much more time do you need in order to reduce the risks that are outstanding. And that's a very powerful message when you're in that situation.
It's a lot better than just stopping testing because the deadline's arrived, right?
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly.
I kind of see it as packing a suitcase. You know, it's the same exercise.
Yeah.
You know, what are you going to put in the case or not? And then how are you going to put it in kind of goes back to our techniques and things. So
I love that analogy. That's good.
Well, you can use it.
No.
just attribute it to me.
Will. You know I will.
Well, you know, what you're describing is a different idea than just the gut feel approach, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's making an informed decision, and that informed decision being we contribute to that by saying how we feel about it, but also getting buy-in from everybody else and for them to make that decision. And if you've got something that's quantifiable and you understand what the risks are, it's then the decision, do you want to go live, yes or no?
So it's the assessment that drives your decision, and
absolutely,
you always have something to point back to, don't you?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. Well, Julie, how can people get in touch with you if they want to know more about what you do and just any questions in general?
Okay, I have a website, www.qstc.co.uk. Please go onto that. There's an inquiry screen on there, and I can also give you my details as well, Randy, if that would help.
Okay, and you do training. You're a Grove trainer, and that's quite an honor because they only run with the best. So,
and then they chose me.
Yeah, they chose you anyway, right?
I know. Yes.
Yeah. Well, Julie, thank you so much for your time and the information that you've been able to share.
Okay, thank you very much, Randy.
And the next interview that I would like to play for you is with my good friend Lloyd Roden, who is also with Grove Consultants. And Lloyd has become a very special friend over the years to me. He first invited me to speak at Eurostar, I believe it was 2002, in Edinburgh. And since that time, we've really gotten to know each other, and it's been a real pleasure. And also, it's really been great for Lloyd to be over here speaking at the STAR conferences recently, the past couple of 3 years. And so this particular conference that I interviewed him at, he had been speaking on mentoring. And that's something that's really near and dear to my heart, because I believe that you can get trained in a classroom, but to truly learn something, then it requires some kind of long-term interaction with people who really know the ropes at where you're at. And that's exactly what mentoring is all about. So anyway, let's go to the interview now with Lloyd.
I'm talking with Lloyd Roden of Grove Consultants, and I'm going to talk to Lloyd a little bit about apprenticeships and some of the things you've been talking about at the conference, Lloyd. And can you tell me a little bit about why you chose this topic, or why this is even important? What piqued your interest in it?
Hi, yeah, sure, Andy. I guess for me, it's one of the areas that I feel very passionate about, that we don't seem to be, the IT industry doesn't seem to be learning from some of the more mature industries and organizations. We tend to just throw testers in and just say, get on and test, rather than having an apprentice, somebody who can learn from maybe more of an expert in that field. So it's working alongside, learning the trade. If you have a look at some of these, the organizations and industries like medical, like chefs, like soccer or sports, they all have some form of apprenticeships, but we don't seem to have that within IT.
But that's very true, and I remember when I first got into IT, of course this was many years ago, but you had to go to work for a company that had a real computer, which was immense. You had to go to a big company, and I think we've kind of gotten out of that mold, because we can learn things at home now on a PC and take them into the corporate environment, and we've kind of gotten away from that path, haven't we?
Yeah, that's right. And to some degree, you can teach yourself, you can learn from yourself, but you know, apprenticeships is much, much more. It's somebody gaining maybe a skill set over a period of time and willing to share that with somebody that's not so skilled in that area. And there's the old saying that I think it's something like, you hear, you forget, you see, you remember, but you do and you fully understand. And I think it's that doing, working alongside and doing it, that's where we grasp and fully understand.
That's really true. So to me, the idea of an apprentice also kind of implies the idea of a mentor and someone who can fill that role. Do you find experienced testers usually willing to do that if they're asked?
There's two schools there. Some are, because of their nature and generosity, but I feel sometimes we're a little bit more insular, feel that we want to retain it for ourselves for whatever, and I think maybe that's a little bit of human nature coming out, I don't know, but it's sad when that happens. I think the more we give away, the more we'll get back, and I think that's the philosophy I think we all ought to adopt, is being able to give away some of our expertise for the benefit of the community and for the benefit of our organization.
Yeah, absolutely. We really do learn best what we teach, don't we?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, great. Well, Lloyd, thank you so much for your time and your willingness to share with us today.
Okay. Thank you.
And if you want to get in contact with either Julie or Lloyd, you can do that from Grove Consultants' website at www.groveconsultants.co.uk. And once again, I'd like to thank Julie and Lloyd for being a part of our podcast today. And stay tuned for the next podcast, where we'll have another interview with another industry luminary of some type. All I have to do is track one down at one of these conferences, and I'll have them on here. So anyway, thanks for listening, and have a good one.